Good morning, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Hawk Blogger Mornings. I am Brian Nemhauser, and coming to you early on this Monday morning after the Seahawks pulled off a big win in Carolina, 27-10, and now are in position to win one more game, win the division, and win the top seed. Hopefully y'all can hear me okay, and I know this isn't the best backdrop. It's all I've got. I'm heading out of the hotel here as soon as I'm done with this show, heading to the airport and making my way back to Seattle for what will be a short week because the San Francisco 49ers also took care of business last night in Santa Clara, beating the Bears 42-38, which means that those two teams will play for who will be the number one overall seed in the NFC. As much as you're a little nervous about it, I'm sure, you also couldn't ask for anything better than a game that's going to decide a lot on in enemy territory, symmetrically at the end of the season where you started the season against that team at home and had a disappointing loss. It's an opportunity. It's an opportunity to not only win the number one seed, to not only win the division, but to enter the playoffs with confidence that you can win a big game anywhere you need to win it against anyone you need to win it against. So I'm excited. I'm excited. It's a little bit unfortunate that it's a Saturday night game. In my mind, this is the game of the week, and I don't think it's close. The fact that the Steelers kind of crapped down their leg and lost to the Browns, and now the reward is that they get to play the Ravens on Sunday Night Football for a win and get in game for a terrible division with gross teams. You know, this is the reality of how decisions get made for scheduling. Those teams have quarterbacks that people like to watch and have big fan bases, and that's enough. But I got to tell you, NFL fans know which game is the game to watch next week. So I'll catch you up on all those scenarios, all that stuff. If you haven't already given the show a like and click subscribe, I would appreciate it. Yeah, let's kind of catch up on, I'll talk about, obviously, the game against the Panthers. We'll talk about some of the stuff there. Talk a little bit about the 49ers game that's upcoming and some things to keep an eye on there. But let's start by just talking about the implications playoff-wise of what's ahead of the Seahawks. So, just to keep it as simple as possible, Seahawks win, there's no question. Number one seed, they don't need anything from anybody else. The Seahawks lose, and they will either be the fifth seed or the sixth seed. Now, that's a big difference. The reason that they could be the fifth seed or the sixth seed is if the Rams win their game tonight against the Falcons and win their game next week against the Cardinals, which they are likely to do, that combined with the Seahawks loss would mean that the Seahawks would be the sixth seed. They would travel to Philadelphia. The fifth seed, whoever is there, will travel to either Tampa Bay or back here to Carolina. That's a big difference in terms of level of competition in the first week of the playoffs. But let's hope that none of that matters and the Seahawks just do what they need to do to get this dub in Santa Clara. So that's kind of the scenario stuff. The other part of this, in case you're curious, the Rams are eliminated from both the division contest as well as the number one seed. They can be neither. They're either going to be the fifth seed or the sixth seed. They are going to be on the road for the first week of the playoffs. It's honestly pretty stunning. As good as that team is, as well as they've been playing in control of the division the way that they were, to end up not only being out of the division race with a week to go, but being on the road for a fifth or a sixth seed, it's a big fall. Now, I happen to think that it's not going to matter for the Rams team, you know, especially if they're a fifth seed. You got to like their chances against either Tampa Bay or Carolina, but it's a pretty astounding fall from grace for the Rams. And I was thinking about it a little bit that, you know, honestly, Rams fans have every reason to feel very good about their team and feel like they're the favorites to win the Super Bowl. I think that that's a fair way for Rams fans to feel. At the same time, the Rams did lose, like, blew a game against the Eagles on the road late. They did blow a game against the Seahawks. They did go on the road to Carolina, the same place I'm sitting right now, with pretty similar weather, cold and rainy, and they had their quarterback make some turnovers, and they lost. The Seahawks came here yesterday, and their quarterback had his customary turnovers, unfortunately, and they won by 17. So I don't play the, you know, if this happened to this team against the same opponent, then it means this when that, you know, that's all ridiculous. Like, a lot of things change, whatever. But the Rams are a curious team as well. I mean, we're going to talk a lot more about the Seahawks than the Rams, but to be as good as they are and to have four losses at this point, honestly, is kind of bad. I don't know a better way to put it. Like, that team should not have four losses. And I think you could argue the Seahawks should not have three losses. Depending on how you feel with the Rams game, you could say they should have one more. But if you look back to the games that they've lost, the game against the Bucks, you know, the game against the 49ers, those were games you definitely could have won. And the game, you know, the first game against the Rams, by, like, you can pretty much swap. If you want to say, hey, the Seahawks should have won the game against the Rams the first time, you can say the Rams should have won the game, the second game against the Seahawks in the second matchup. So in any event, I mean, this is a Seahawks team that is now tied for the franchise record in point differential. What are they, plus one? I just posted this yesterday, so I should know this answer, but plus 181. And I think it's worth noting that that's in 16 games. That's in 16 games, the same amount as those teams played. So it's not like they're just getting the bonus. They will hopefully, by winning a game, set the franchise record for point differential, or, you know, solidly be alone in second place. So, I think it's an interesting place for things to be. I'll get to the Carolina game in a second, but my mind goes to the 49ers because, man, the offense is really impressive. There's no doubt about it. Brock Purdy, for all the haters out there, I've never been really a hater, although with his new dancing that he does, he is rising up the villain charts pretty quickly. But he was amazing last night, and he was amazing against the Colts. And if you think back to week one against the Seahawks, it was his ingenuity in, you know, extending plays, breaking from the pockets, all those types of things that I think was as much a reason as the 49ers won that game as anything else. The Seahawks, if you remember, they pressured him more than he had ever been pressured in his career. And he was constantly on the move, constantly having to run around. That's how he hurt his toe. So he had all that happen, and he threw some turnovers, which he did in this game as well. But he also just kept drives alive and kept them moving. So he's playing with a lot of confidence. It almost doesn't matter who's out there on the field with him. I mean, he last night was playing without George Kittle. Ricky Pearsall was in and out of the lineup. It was a lot of Jake Tongis and DeMarcus Robinson and you know, Kyle Juszczyk caught some, and then obviously a lot of Christian McCaffrey. And so that offense is basically, you know, not punting for the most part, right? They punted a couple times last night, but their offense is playing really, really well. But that defense, you know, when it's a 42-38 game, one thing you could say, well, hey, the Seahawks just played a 38-37 game. Their defense is pretty good. Well, that was a terrible game for the Seahawks defense, no question about it. And that was an aberration. The 49ers defense came into that game as one of the worst defenses in football, the worst pass rush in football, a crumbling, you know, run defense in general, and that continued against the Bears. I thought, as someone who's been pretty critical of Caleb Williams at times, I thought that was his best game I've watched from beginning to end, at least. Yes, he missed some throws, but I thought he generally operated really well within the pocket, which has been my biggest criticism of him. He delivered some really nice third down conversions, some great deep balls that he's known for. But, I mean, the 49ers give up 440 yards, 38 points, 330 yards passing. Yeah, and if in terms of the points that they've given up, I mean, 38 points to the Bears, they gave up 27 points to the Colts, they gave up 24 points to the Titans. So this is a defense that, you know, is just not very good right now. And in addition to that, there's going to be some interesting things to pay attention to with the injury situation, because this game is happening on a Saturday night, 5 o'clock Pacific time. We're talking about the potential that some players that might have been available on a Sunday game might not be available on a Saturday game. Who are some of the names to keep an eye on? Well, first, let's start with the new names from the 49ers game last night. Trent Williams, their left tackle, went out with a hamstring injury after the first play of the game and did not return. And that's not a great sign. I mean, I'm sure he'll do everything he possibly can to play, but being ruled out that quickly and then a shorter week, it's a lot to ask. So that all by itself would be a massive, massive change for the 49ers. Additionally, Ricky Pearsall did seem to bother his knee, although he came back and played and was a big part of the win, so maybe that's nothing. Upton Stout, their nickel corner, who I loved coming out of college, feisty player, physical player, has been a playmaker for them. He's also given up a lot of plays. He left with a concussion. We'll see kind of concussion, how severe it is, but that's one to watch. And the guy that came in his place, Chase Lucas, not very good. So that would be a big change. And then one that I hadn't seen until this morning, Keon White, one of their defensive linemen, injured his groin. That would also be a big one if, for some reason, he's unable to go. So that's the 49ers injury situation. If you turn around to the Seahawks, Rashid Shaheed, that's the big one, was lost with a concussion. Don't know, won't know what his availability is till we get further into it. You know, I'm not a doctor. It was, of all the types of impact, it seemed like one of the lesser kinds. It wasn't, you know, he didn't get a helmet to helmet or anything like that. But that was an unnecessary roughness on Mike Jackson, but went uncalled. One of many, you know, plays that went uncalled, or at least did not go the Seahawks way. And then next, you've got Kobe Bryant, who's got a knee injury. He did not play in this game. I don't know if he's going to play in this next one. And then Charles Cross. I thought Josh Jones looked like he was a little more vulnerable in this game. Certainly, I think he gave up one of the sacks. I know that. And we'll see if Charles Cross is ready to get back to it. They called it, after it was injured, a 2 to 4 week injury. It's 2 weeks now, so we'll be going on the third week coming up. We'll see if that's enough time for Charles Cross to get back. But those are important players for both teams that could have some effect on what goes on in that contest. I think the Trent Williams one is certainly, of all of those, the biggest. The next biggest in my mind is the Rashid Shaheed injury. You really, this passing game needs every man on deck that you can find. Everyone keeps asking about Torrey Horton. It seems like that happens no matter what we post about or what I see the Seahawks post about. The news is the same. It has not changed. He's got a shin injury. They've not been specific about what kind of shin injury. Mike McDonald has been non-committal that he will come back at all this season. So I would not be asking every week, you know, what about Torrey Horton? Or every press conference, what about Torrey Horton? You're going to get the same answer. It's just like Mike McDonald said there's some things he's got to be able to do. He hasn't been able to do them yet. And so that's where things stand. I would not hold your breath for Torrey Horton coming back. The Seahawks also lost Cody White. That's actually not a huge deal, but it is a big deal. He's been a good special teams contributor. He has been one of the backup return men. So that's the other thing with Rashid Shaheed. He's not just a receiver. He's the primary returner. And then Cody White's also been one of the key receivers that comes in. So he has a groin injury. Sounds like he's going to miss some time based on what Mike McDonald said. So receiver room, depending on what happens with Rashid Shaheed, a little bit dicey. You've got Jake Bobo. You got Derek Young. I would guess the Seahawks would bring up Ricky White, as they have done before, and have him available if they need him with the Cody White injury, but we will see. Yeah, lots of little moving parts here and there. I see someone mentioning Tyrone Brodin. He's on the injured list. So he's on the practice squad injured list. So he's not available as far as I know, unless something's changed. All right. So apologies for the pauses. I'm used to having the screen in front of me. I'm also used to it not being, you know, 4 in the morning when I'm doing this, or what is it, 5:30 now in the morning. Let's talk about this game for a second. Let's talk about the Seahawks-Panthers game for a second. I know probably most people have moved on already to thinking about this 49ers game, but there's kind of a few things that I think are important about this Panthers game. The first of which is the Seahawks running game. And as much as we've seen a decline in the Seahawks passing game, which we have over the last few weeks, the running game has been slowly but surely gaining steam. And I wanted to check out a couple things here with you. I haven't had a chance to look before. But if we go, we'll do our from week 10 on. This has kind of been when we saw things turn around for the running game. Let's check to see where they now rank in terms of rush EPA and success rate since week 10. The Seahawks are now 10th, top 10 rushing offense in the NFL by rush EPA since week 10. That's pretty big deal. And, you know, we saw in the Rams game, this was a team that put up 171 yards rushing. You saw Ken Walker was the kind of star of that game with the explosive runs he'd had, but Rashid Shaheed also had an explosive run. This game, it was Zach Charbonnet. First 100-yard game of the season, 110 yards. I think he averaged over 6 yards a carry, had 2 touchdowns, had some explosive runs of his own. And, you know, the Seahawks put up 163 yards rushing. So now you're talking about out of the past, since week 10, the Seahawks have had over 114 yards rushing in all but one game. They've had over 125 yards rushing in 6 out of the 8 games. That's a pretty healthy run game when the Seahawks had only one game over 125 yards in the first 8 weeks of the season. So first 9 weeks of the season, excuse me. So I think there's some signs of positive progression there that it's going to be pretty important, because one of the things that you have to have if your passing game is struggling, partially because the defense is running a too high shell and taking, you know, taking away the deep passes, which you excel at, you've got to be able to punish them on the ground. You have to be able to do that. If you cannot do that, you're dead. And while the Seahawks, as frustrating as the offense has been and as much of a slog as it's been, the reality is the Seahawks have scored 27 points, 38 points. Now I know that one 30, call it 30 without the special teams, or call it 32 if you want to give them credit for the 2-point conversion. 37 points. So like they've been putting up quite a few points, even though it's not always coming from the offense and it's not always coming from the passing game or explosive passes. And they're not yet at the point where I think teams fear their running game. Let's be honest. It's not that kind of running game yet. But they are now punishing teams in a way that they were not before. And they did enough in this game that on third down, they were able to convert 9 of 16, I believe, was the third down conversions in this game. I'll pull that up just to make sure I am not making it up. 9 for 16. So you'd rather not have 16 third down conversions as part of the challenge, but the fact that you were able to convert a lot of those, because a lot of those were short yardage third downs, not all of them. There are definitely some more third and long conversions, but that was an encouraging part of this game. I think we're going to find that part of the reason that that went well, I think Zach Charbonnet had a fantastic game. I also think that the offensive line, especially I think the right side, had a pretty good game run blocking. I'll have to go back and, you know, see all the film to verify. But I thought that they were moving some people in this game, which was pretty cool and important, because they're going to need that heading into the games ahead. Now, the other piece of this game that obviously we're all going to focus on is the state of the passing game. And it's rough. It's a rough watch right now. Partially, I think you've got to be concerned about the game plans that are not seeming to get people open. I think one of the, there's two things that I think nobody's talking about enough as part of the issue for what's been going on. One of them is the offensive line and pass protection has not been as good. Remember, there was a part in the season where the Seahawks had the fewest sacks allowed of any team in the NFL. They were, you know, the pass protection was pretty good. I don't feel like it's been that good of late, and especially that shows up to me in a game where against the Panthers, who have a terrible pass rush, the Seahawks still gave up a few sacks, and I thought the pocket was collapsing early on that sped up Sam Darnold, and like the offensive line's got to be better. So like that's one. The other is the dirty little secret is the receiver room. Like, I don't know that they're getting much separation outside of, I mean, JSN can get separation against anyone, but I think he's got cloud coverage, multiple guys always around him, so define getting open. And I think this is part of the question that we've always had about this team is Cooper Kupp able to still be a primary target if you need him to be? Can Rashid Shaheed or Torrey Horton be that step up and be the game breaker if you need them to be? Torrey Horton's shown he can be. I think we know Rashid Shaheed can be a complimentary guy. I don't know that he can be your number one target in a game where JSN's being limited, but that's another aspect of what's going on here that I don't know that enough people are mentioning. It's always, you know, I think it's understandable why it's always going to start with Sam Darnold, because he's not handling the lack of, like, he's not handling the dysfunction very well. He is adding to the dysfunction. So that's, I think, the way I would describe it. But I would not put this all on Sam Darnold, not because I'm trying to protect him or anything like that. I think Sam Darnold's generally shown that if he has a clean pocket and he is either on the move, he'd be using play action, he's got good, clean reads, he can make some remarkable throws and some good decisions. Clear winning football. And so when those things aren't happening, I don't just assume it's because, oh, he's just playing poorly all of a sudden. So, I mean, short week, Clint Kubiak got outcoached significantly by Robert Saleh in the first game of the season. Remember, this was a game where the Seahawks famously spent most of the time out of shotgun, only had one play action pass the entire game. Everything was all these little lame, quick screen passes that were going nowhere. They were terrified of the pass rush from Nick Bosa, essentially. And it was a really, really ugly offensive game. So Clint Kubiak can't overthink it. there's only so many things Robert Saleh can do. You've got a whole season of film on him. And I think the Seahawks are going to have to be able to run the ball, which the 49ers know. And if the 49ers have anything that they feel decently about, it would probably be their run defense, although I don't think that's very good either. But they do have some big guys up front. And then you're going to need to have situations where other guys are getting open. A.J. Barner was a big part of what worked in this game. And A.J. Barner's having a heck of a year. As it stands, A.J. Barner is the second leading receiver on this team with 50 catches at 505 yards and six touchdowns. So, you know, it's kind of past the point where it's like, oh, cool, A.J. Barner contributed. That's fun. He's a growing player in his second year. They kind of need him. Like, they need A.J. Barner to be that guy every game. And that's a new concept for him. It's probably a new concept for the team. But I think a big part of how the Seahawks, when they've had some success against these two deep zone defenses, it's really been three things that I would say that stand out. One, Sam Darnold going through his progressions and not getting stuck on one guy. And going through his progressions means getting to the point where he can make a quick decision to hit the dump off. And that's the underneath passes when teams are playing too deep. That's where you can gain some leaky yardage, yards after the carry, yards after the catch. So when he, against the Rams in week 11, remember Ken Walker catching like swing passes out on the perimeter and running for 30 yards. You're not always going to get that big of a play, but you've got to be able to get the 5 to 7 to 15 yard kind of perimeter passes or dump offs over the middle when teams are playing those zones. The other thing that has worked is kind of killing the middle when A.J. Barner can, like, it, again, you go back to that first Rams game. It was A.J. Barner over the middle of the field that was catching a lot of passes and moving the chains. They weren't necessarily big explosive plays, but they were available. And so I think that's the other thing. And the third thing is what we already talked about. It's you got to be able to run the ball in those situations. And so that's kind of the formula that has been enough to win all but one game since, I mean, since week 11, since when was that? Since November 16th, since before Thanksgiving, you know, and they've won. Oh my gosh, they've won 10 of their last 11 games. So the Seahawks, you know, it's been kind of challenging at times, no question about it. But they're winning and winning and winning. And it's not like they're doing it against the worst possible opponents in games that mean nothing. They did beat the Rams. They did beat them. I know it's kind of feels dirty to talk about to some people. I think that, you know, they went and they won that game. The Panthers, we could say that the Panthers aren't very good, which I think this is fair. Panthers ended up being playing at home for the division title yesterday because the Bucks blew it against the Dolphins and Quinn Ewers. So the Panthers had everything to play for, and they were fired up, and the crowd was fired up, and they were in it. It was 3-3 at halftime, and, you know, then there was the, you know, Seahawks get up 10-7, but there was the turnover, and, like, I mean, there was a lot of things that, like, there was points where it went at 17-3, got back to 17-10, then there was the third and long that, you know, they were going crazy for, but there was the face mask that they finally did call. My point is, this game meant a lot to the Panthers, and the Seahawks did not play their best game, and they won by 17. And so I fully, fully understand the reaction of, like, you know, is this team going to have enough to win against really good opponents? Like, you can't keep playing C-plus games and beating really good teams or beating good playoff teams. But that's kind of what they've been doing. And if you look at past playoff teams that have had some success, what it's really going to require, what it means, I mean, this is obvious, but I'm just going to say it anyway. You hear about complementary football all the time, right? It gets a little old how much you hear about complementary football. But I think about complementary football not as everybody contributing equally, right? It is if one aspect of your team, offense, defense, special teams, you know, you can go down to pass rush, run defense, you know, passing game, run game, whatever, like breaking it down to the molecular parts. If one part of your team is declining or not playing to standard, it just means the other parts have to play above. Like they have to raise their level of play to compensate for the deficit. And that's kind of what's been happening in some cases. The special teams compensates, the defense compensates, the run game compensates for the pass game. And I think when you look at this team, I think you have to feel like the defense, I mean, it's always been a defense-led team. But this team will go as far as the defense takes them. I think that as much as you want to make it about Sam Darnold and the turnovers, I think he is who he is. And I think expecting that to just magically go away is probably not realistic at this point. And then the defense has, like, they were outstanding yesterday. 139 yards, gave up 40 yards passing. That was the fewest yards passing they had given up to an opponent since 1998, when Bobby Hoying for the Eagles had 12 yards in a 38-0 shellacking that the Seahawks delivered in Philadelphia. But they've got to be better, like even better, honestly. Like they were great yesterday. The thing that's a little concerning for me on the Seahawks defense was the pass rush. Like, I still don't feel the pass rush getting home and disrupting the quarterback as much as I think it needs to for them to be dominant. I think what the Seahawks are right now defensively is incredibly sound. Like, they are smart, savvy, physical, excellent tacklers, consistent. Coverage is tight. Like, they do so many things really, really well. But you get a really good offense with a really good quarterback who's on his stuff, they can still move the ball against a defense like that. In order to really, like, be dominant, you have to affect the quarterback consistently. And the Seahawks had been like the number one QB pressure team in the NFL for a lot of this season. They were not, they have not been the last few weeks. So I'm pulling up, actually, I have not seen their official pressure rate from the NFL for this game. So I'm going to pull that up. Good chance, if you haven't already, to give the show a like and click subscribe. Go over to patreon.com/hawkblogger and, you know, sign up, get access to the Discord server, get ad-free audio for this show. If the ads are annoying to you on the audio listen, just go to patreon.com/hawkblogger. You get your own RSS feed that you can put into any of your favorite podcast players and listen to this show ad-free. All right, so let's look at pressure rates. Seahawks had a 33.3% pressure rate yesterday against the Panthers, giving them credit for 10 pressures. 33.3% pressure rate is the fifth lowest of the season for the Seahawks. You want to know their highest pressure rate of the season? 60.5% against the San Francisco 49ers. That was with a healthy Trent Williams, by the way, and with George Kittle for at least the beginning of that game. I'm looking down here of the Seahawks' sixth worst. Okay, let's say that again. Of the Seahawks' six worst pressure rate games of the season, four of them have come since week 11. So that's not a good trend. They have got to affect the quarterback more than they are. It was great that they got the fumble yesterday. DeMarcus Lawrence is just a beast. That was another hustle, forced fumble and recovery. Julian Love, savvy, smart play, baited them into that pick. That was great. You need to see more of the quarterback strip sacks. You need to see more of the quarterback hurried to make bad decisions, interceptions. You just need more of those, realistically. And you might say, like, how can you possibly criticize a defense that gave up 10 points and 139 yards and was just absolutely amazing yesterday? It's not a criticism. This is just a reality check. You're not going to win with the way this offense is performing and a defense that is registering 30% pressure rates. It's not enough. It's not enough. You need to be in the 40% or pushing the 40% range. I think in order for this Seahawks team to get where we all want them to go. Now, I'm going to have a little fun here. Let's look at the 49ers pressure rates. Okay, so we're going to look at the 49ers pressure rates, and we are going to... They had a 21% pressure rate last night against the Bears. I just said 33% is not good enough for the Seahawks. The 49ers have had a pressure rate above 33%. Wow. Once since week two. Wow. They had a 36.7% pressure rate against the Browns in week 13, but they haven't even, they've only been over 30% pressure rate twice since week three. So, this is not a team that generates much pressure. That's a good thing, you know, but neither were the Panthers, and somehow they managed to create pressure. So, the offensive line's definitely got to lock in and change things there a bit. All right, I think we have some super chats. Let's get to those. And sorry, I wasn't putting these up on to show here. All right. Casual Clink says, Sam Darnold now has a forced fumble. This is true. I think it was the first tackle of his career. I hope he never has to make another. Bam Bam Cambino says, living in Canada, my brothers and I cheer for different teams. Nothing sweeter than a W while my Panthers fan brother hosts Christmas meal. Yeah, I feel for Panthers fans. I think I'll be cheering for them probably, although honestly, I'm not sure I care that much one way or another. But yeah, it is that offense had nothing going for it. It had no answers. Once the Seahawks stopped the run, they were kind of hopeless, and that showed. Adam the Islandson says, these turnovers are going to hurt in the postseason. Well, I've got news for you, Adam. They can't, because they've already happened. So that's the reality. But truthfully, it's probably part of the future, because it's been, you know, part of your past. I can't make the case to myself . Okay. Whoops. Sorry, everybody. Hold on. My alarm went off. let's make sure that that's not coming back. Okay. That's probably a good sign for me to wrap up here soon. Can you guys hear me? Make sure I'm back. I think you guys can hear me now. So, getting back to what I was saying before, I can't make a convincing case to myself or to any of you that this plus this plus this is in the process of happening. That means Sam Darnold's going to stop turning the ball over. Like, I cannot credibly make that case. So, you continue. You just push forward. And I'll just keep reiterating the fact is that as much as it's uncomfortable, this isn't the first time teams have had this kind of situation and gone on to great things. If you don't think that the Ravens felt this way about Trent Dilfer, you'd be wrong. If you don't think that the Bucks felt this way about Brad Johnson, you'd be wrong. Or, you know, the 49ers with Jimmy Garoppolo, I think Jimmy Garoppolo is one of the better comps to me for Sam Darnold in terms of wins and wins and wins a lot, but does turn the ball over a lot. Jared Goff, you know, they felt that way about him in LA and he got to a Super Bowl. So it is not unheard of for teams to be a defensive-led team and, you know, be great on special teams and be, you know, have enough offensively to still win games. And if you go through the NFC right now, as much as you feel concerned about the Seahawks offense, the 49ers defense is worse. And, you know, if you're talking about it to a 49ers fan, the 49ers are up for the number one seed. That defense is absolutely worse than the Seahawks offense. Now, we'll find out Saturday if that's how it plays out, but over the course of 10 games, 5 games, to me there's no question that you'd rather have the Seahawks offense than the 49ers defense. You go to the Eagles. The Eagles offense continues to be terrible. Their defense has gotten better. They've turned the ball over a decent amount lately. They are also hoping that kind of a turtle shell offense that relies mostly on the run and some occasional opportunistic passes plus a good defense is enough. Like, that's the story they're telling themselves right now. We won't even talk about the Bucks and the Panthers, the disaster in Tampa Bay. You know, you kind of keep going. The Bears defense gave up 42 points last night. They were awful. And so, like, the Bears fans are hoping that their offense is good enough. The Packers, haven't even talked about the Packers. Not only do they have a quarterback injury situation, but their running back, Josh Jacobs, has been injured and not been playing that well. The defense got trucked by Derrick Henry and the Ravens in a game that, like, I think meant more to the Packers than it did to the Ravens. So, this is the truth. Now, if you go and you play the Rams, their special teams has been an issue. It's the special teams only plays a very few percentage of the snaps in any game. It's hard for the special teams to be a part of your team that you can count on exploiting the advantage that you've got. That's part of what makes the Rams the favorite, because offense and defense play every game. And though their offense and their defense has been pretty good, although, in case you've not been paying closer attention, the Rams defense of late, not so good. They gave up 34 points to the Lions. They gave up 31 points to this Panthers. Yes, they gave up 31 points and 358 yards to this Panthers offense just a few weeks ago. And then they gave up 38 points to the Seahawks. Again, you want to call it 32 to the offense plus six from the punt return. But I bet Rams fans are a little nervous about how their defense has started to get exploited at times. So everybody's got something. The issue with Sam's turnovers are significant, you know, and it's going to be something that the Seahawks are going to have to, like I said, compensate in other ways. And in those what apparently are going to be rare moments where you get a clean game, Seahawks should be very, very tough to beat. So, you know, that's all I think you can do at this point is kind of hope that good things come the rest of the way for Sam Darnold and Clint Kubiak and the offensive line and so forth. All right. Just double checking a couple things before I probably need to start wrapping up and getting ready for the airport. Appreciate everybody who's already been hanging out. If you haven't already, great time to head on over to simplyseattle.com. Use promo code HawkBlogger15, get you 15% off the best Seattle sports gear you're going to find. Lots of great Seahawks, Mariners, Huskies, whatever your favorite Seattle sports. Simplyseattle.com, code HawkBlogger15. Go to the Sleeper app, download that. Not only do you get $20 without making the deposit, but with you using promo code Hawks, you can get up to a $100 match on your first deposit. Terms and conditions apply. See Sleeper terms of use for details. Currently operational over 25 states. Check out Sleeper today. All right. So I was looking at something on offense here. What was it I was trying to find? Oh, I was going to look at the rushing offense. Gotcha. All right, so we're going to look at the Seahawks. We're going to look week by week, and we're going to look at their best rush EPA games. All right, this is what I thought. So the Seahawks' three best rush EPA games, meaning their rush efficiency, their three best rush efficiency games of the season have come since week 12. Their best rush efficiency game came against the Rams this past Thursday. In fact, that was the sixth most efficient run game since 2015 for the Seahawks. Went unnoticed, but that was a big one. Their second most efficient game was against Tennessee in week 12. Their third most efficient run game of the season, Panthers, this week. That's a good sign. I mean, is it dominant? Not yet. But as far as progress, pretty darn good. The other thing that I like to look at, we've talked about this before, is stuffed rate. Now remember, stuffed rate is the percentage of your rushing attempts that gain zero or negative yards. So you want a low stuffed rate on offense. Their four lowest stuffed rates of the season have all come since week 12. Their lowest one of the season, 5.7%, came against the Rams. Their second lowest, 8%, came against the Rams in the Thursday night game. Their third lowest, 11%, came against the Panthers yesterday. And their fourth lowest came against the Titans, 15%, in week 12. So, again, these are good signs about productive runs that are gaining, even when they're not explosive, they are gaining yards. They're putting themselves into more manageable situations. And I will say, I think it does have an effect on a team. The Seahawks have come back in the fourth quarter. They have been a second half team. I think there is a little bit of hammering and hammering, and it's late in the season. Teams get tired, they're hurt. And so it's a good time for the run game to be coming around. It's not quite what we want it to be, but I still think it is a big part of this. So we'll talk about the 49ers game a ton. I'm going to be on the flight home. I've got to stop in Dallas, and then, you know, we'll see. Hopefully I make the connection, all those things. But I should have plenty of time on the plane. I'm going to be looking at numbers. I'll be writing my morning after column. I'm 99% sure I will be on a plane during Mike McDonald's press conference, so I won't be able to ask the coach any questions today. But I will be back tomorrow morning with Matt Hasselbeck. We'll start to break down this game against the 49ers. Week's going to come quick. It's going to come quick, and I will do my best to keep up with it. I will certainly reach out to Grant Cohen, see if we can get him on for First Look on Wednesday, and have some fun with this one. Battle in the Bay. Let's see if the Seahawks can go take what's theirs. They have been the better team all season. They deserve to be where they are. They are certainly... like, as of right now, I believe the 49ers are favored by 1.5 points. Fine. Like, let's see the Seahawks go in there. I know this is a Seahawks team that really wanted to beat this 49ers team in week one. I think was really let down by, to be honest, Clint Kubiak's game plan. And Tariq Woolen a little bit at the end. It's time. It's time for them to kind of get back into this one. And I'm looking forward to it. I am. I don't think you get to win a Super Bowl by backing into things. I don't think you get number one seeds by backing into them. I think you got to go through it and you got to earn it. And so what better way to start a playoff run than having to go on the road against maybe your biggest rival in the stadium that hosts the Super Bowl and go steal their hearts, crush their souls. Like, go do it. That's what the Seahawks have in front of them. I'm looking forward to watching. All right, folks. Appreciate everyone who's tuned in. I'm going to go get ready for the airport. Stay tuned. I'll have more for you. If you missed any of the stuff from last night, post-game show was fun with my son, Isaac. Thank you for all your kindness to HB Jr., as he put in his title. I didn't even see that because my phone screen's so small when I'm doing those shows. That was fun. And then I also put some locker room sound up. Interview with Nicky Minwori was really good. Conversation with Chenna Nwosu. I feel bad. I didn't remember. No, it was his birthday, so I didn't say happy birthday. But good talk with Chenna. Also with Eric Saubert and with Ty Okada. So all that's up for people on patreon.com/hawkblogger ad-free, or you can get it wherever you get your audio podcast, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, so forth. All right. And just as we're wrapping up, we got a new member here, Dylan Wright. Welcome to the show. Appreciate you doing that. All right, everybody. Thank you, and have a great rest of your Monday.